Go behind the wheel and under the hood on everything automotive with high-speed stuff from HowStuffWorks.com. Join Josh and Chuck, the guys who bring you Stuff You Should Know, as they take a trip around the world to help you get smarter in a topsy-turvy economy. Check out the all-new Super Stuffed Guide to the Economy from HowStuffWorks.com, available now exclusively on iTunes.
Welcome to the podcast. Thanks for tuning in. I'm Ben, here with HowStuffWorks auto editor, Scott. Scott, how was your vacation?
It was fantastic, Ben. Thank you.
Now, a lot of our listeners probably haven't heard yet that you just got back, right?
Yes, I did. Yeah, it was a pretty awesome trip. I went to Vegas, and I guess I was just mentioning to you here in the studio that I saw some authentic rat rods on the road while I was there, and it was pretty exciting. I was excited by the whole thing. It was good.
Yeah.
I just hadn't really been around them. In Detroit, there were a few. Mm-hmm. These were Southwest, really awesome-looking rat rods. They were there for the Viva Las Vegas rockabilly show thing that was happening there, and it was really cool.
Well, that's cool,
cool
man.
Cool event.
Didn't get to drive one yet, though.
No, I didn't, but, you know, just to see them on the road, it's totally different than seeing, you know, the images, and it's really cool.
Well, while you were away, I had a lot of time to think about automotive-related subjects.
Did you?
I did take a moment or two.
Yeah.
Okay.
You need a vacation, too.
Yeah, I think I've got a pretty good one.
Okay.
Are you ready?
Yeah.
Can cars run on air? It's a wild idea. Hmm. I know.
Hmm. The answer is yes. They can run on air. Which just seems unbelievable, doesn't it?
Yeah, I guess I should have made that a more complex question, because now it sounds like we're
done.
Yeah,
we're done. Thanks, everybody, for listening.
And we're back. How does that work?
No, it's possible, and there's a company that's doing it right now. It's a French company. Uh-huh. They're building cars that run on air. They run on compressed air.
Is it a French company people have heard of?
Possibly. I mean, they're kind of tied into the Indian company Tata Motors, which you probably remember very recently, or maybe not, I don't know, but they've developed the world's cheapest car.
The Tata Nano.
That's right, yeah. And this car is under $2,000, I think is what they said. And they're partnered with them, or actually they have the support of Tata Motors. The company is called MDI, which stands for Motor Development International. Mm-hmm. And again, I said it's a French company, mm-hmm. and they're developing these engines that operate on compressed air. And they not only do that, they make the vehicles that these things go into. So they're creating the entire package.
Oh, that's super cool. I guess in some ways it's almost like an indie car company.
Yeah, it kind of is. Yeah, it really is. They're more of a motor development company, is what, you know, it's right there in their name. But they're designing, like I said, they're designing the whole package to go with it, because that makes sense. You know, I mean, how to apply the technology.
Okay, so it's not as though this car is just rolling off of air coming into the intake in the front.
No, it's not like that. It's not like it regenerates itself as it drives through the air. Nothing like that. It doesn't just gather ambient air, I guess, to operate. You have to compress the air and then use that compressed air to operate this, well, to change it into rotational energy, which is then used to drive the wheels.
Okay.
So basically, you know, it's again, compressed air in this big tank, again, changes it to rotational energy, drives the wheels. The problem is, how do you compress that air? I mean, you do it at home. Okay, here's the problem.
All right.
We'll get into this. Just we'll give some advantages and disadvantages.
Okay.
Here's one disadvantage right now, is that you have to compress the air somehow, and it actually takes quite a bit of time to compress the amount of air needed to make one of these things move, because you can imagine it takes a lot of air to make a vehicle move.
Probably
doesn't matter.
Heavy, too. In comparison to other vehicles, it's maybe not that heavy, but it's still a lot of weight to push.
It is a lot of weight to push. They are pretty lightweight, though. They're on the light side. I'll find it here somewhere. I've got in my notes the weight of these things. But, the idea is that, you know, you compress this big mass of air, a lot of air, large volume of air, I should say.
Uh-huh.
It takes some time to do that. It doesn't happen instantly. It doesn't happen in just a couple of minutes, even. Although it might someday.
Mm-hmm.
But if you plug these things in at home, it takes a typical compressor at home, like a, you know, something that you would use to pump up your tires on your car,
okay,
a small air compressor. It might take as many as a couple of hours, 2 or 3 hours even.
Wow,
to
so
fill
you have
the tank.
You have to plan ahead.
Yeah, that's right. And that fuel, that compressed air is good for about, I think they said it's approximately 130 miles between when you have to charge this thing up again.
Okay, so this is more, this is starting to sound more like a city car.
Yeah, it is, really. It's okay. It's a commuter type vehicle.
Okay. Well, what, I'm sorry, I'm stuttering because I'm trying to ask a bunch of questions at once. I mean, what, how would it work if you drive half that distance, say, right? Mm-hmm. 65 miles or something.
Sure.
And then you want to recharge it.
You would simply plug the car in. It has an onboard compressor.
Oh, okay.
You plug it in. And now, okay, that's sometimes they're saying that some of these vehicles will have onboard compressors, some won't. Eventually they probably will have something different. I'll talk about that in a moment, too.
Sure. Okay.
I'm getting to a lot of things that we're going to have to talk about.
Yeah,
I hope I remember them all.
We'll go through them.
The idea is that you drive this thing to and from work, you come home, you plug it in, and it charges itself in 2 or 3 hours, and you're done. You drive off the next day and go to work.
So it's never, this is not your drive to Vegas car.
No. This would be, long distances, that would be another disadvantage, is that, you would have to pull over, refuel this thing with air, I guess, and, compress the air. And it may take as many as 2 or 3 hours to fill the tank. Now, if you go to a station that's purposely built for this, that the air is already compressed, this may exist in the future. This is the kind of thing where, it may just take a couple of minutes to do this.
I see.
2 or 3 minutes at most. Now, the same problem is kind of occurring with this, or the idea is that, let's say right now we don't have any electric cars, fully electric cars that are mass produced. We have a few that are,
Again,
independent companies that are making them. But there's no, consistency in the places that you can pull over to have these things charged up or quickly charge them or swap out batteries or whatever the way to refuel these things would be.
There's no infrastructure.
That's right. There's no infrastructure. So same thing with these air cars is that, until something's in place for, to make these long-distance travels, it's just not really going to be all that practical.
Well, I'm going to raise a point that I think most people think is an advantage,
mm-hmm.
and if you're okay with it, I think I may have figured out why that's not quite the case.
No, I'm not okay with it.
You're not okay with it?
Yeah. What is it?
Okay. All right. So one argument, it sounds like, mm-hmm. One argument would be that these cars would perhaps be more environmentally friendly because, of course, they don't use gasoline in the vehicle.
Mm-hmm.
But the argument against that argument would be that using the compressor, it really depends on what is powering the compressor, right?
That's right, yeah. Probably electricity.
Uh-huh.
And electricity is generated at a big plant somewhere.
Right, usually a lot of coal power.
A lot of coal power, that's right. So, it's not to say that it couldn't be, created cleanly.
Mm-hmm.
But there's trade-offs, I guess. I mean, you're in this air car. It does have a compressor, or it requires a compressor to fill it, and that has to come. That energy to run that compressor has to come from somewhere,
mm-hmm.
and like you said, it could be from a power source at home. There could be a version. Now, I think the early versions of these are talking about having. Okay, see, we're getting to one of our points here. That's good.
All right.
I remembered. Early versions may have onboard compressors that can kind of operate on the fly.
Oh, neat. Okay.
So that might extend the range. And now they're talking, I've seen numbers as high as, 800 miles, 1,000 miles, whatever. To me, I don't know, it sounds like maybe you'd be able to go indefinitely, but maybe not because an onboard compressor, you wouldn't be able to run that using electricity. You would have to use gasoline to operate that.
It'd be a hybrid almost.
It kind of would, yeah. In a sense, the gasoline would power the compressor that would then fill the tank. So, 800 to 1,000 miles sounds about right, I suppose.
Okay.
Because, you're traveling a certain distance, the compressor kicks on,
mm-hmm.
compresses it as it goes, so you never really run out. I think the other numbers that I saw said something about, maybe as much as 8 gallons of fuel on board. So, that kind of gets into now how many miles are you getting per gallon? And,
right.
So it adds another level to it, I suppose.
Yeah, another area of calculation.
And then that does create, of course, that's internal combustion, really.
Right, so for some people it might defeat the purpose. But
maybe, but you're still talking about an extremely efficient vehicle that, produces far less carbon emissions than would a standard vehicle that's operating only on internal combustion.
Well, let's go with the size of these, because mm-hmm. you said they're pretty lightweight.
Oh yeah.
I'm thinking this is probably doesn't look like your average sedan, does it?
No. Have you seen the photos then?
No.
Okay.
You told me not to look at them.
Yeah, because it's kind of surprising. Okay, Ben, without being, I don't want to be sensational about this or whatever, but to me, the vehicle that we feature in our article on HowStuffWorks.com, mm-hmm. It's called the AirPod 1. I think it's MDI's AirPod 1. When you see this thing, to me, it appears like a ride at Chuck E. Cheese's.
A ride?
Yeah. It looks like a kid's ride at Chuck E. Cheese. And it's because it has round windows. It's called the AirPod 1. It's a very small car, as you can imagine. Real rounded, I guess. It's real tall, somewhat narrow. Has two wheels in the back that look, you know, pretty big, kind of like big bicycle tires or something like that.
Let me check this out.
Small car tires, I guess.
This is what you're talking about?
That's the one.
Oh, man.
And in the front, there are two very small wheels. You can't see them in that photo, but you can find photos of this thing online. You should take a look.
Okay.
Very unusual seating pattern in this thing as well. They apparently, I'm going by it now, the site that I saw, this is MDI's site. Mm-hmm. All French.
Oh.
Or at least the version I was looking at. I probably should have looked around for, you know, the English version. But I'm gathering that they're a little less than 500 pounds.
500 pounds?
The car, yeah.
That's amazing.
Now, when you add the people, you know, it says it'll seat four people. That's three adults and one child. There's a small seat for a child, I guess. And this is really odd. The driver sits alone in the front, facing one way, kind of like if it's like a triangle-shaped vehicle. He sits at the peak of the triangle, I guess, the front of the triangle.
Okay.
And drives that way. And there's a joystick that operates this car. It's not a steering wheel.
Not a wheel.
The whole front end opens up. It kind of flips open. I'm making a motion with my hand. Looks like a gull-wing door.
Like a hatchback on the front. Almost.
Yeah, that's right. And you climb in and sit in that way. And that's the driver. The two passengers sit facing rearward in the back, side by side, and I couldn't tell where that third seat was. I couldn't see it.
Where are they hiding that kid?
I don't know. I don't know, but there's not much room in it. It's definitely a commuter car, very small. There's a whole group of cars that this company makes that use this air compressed air engine, rather. And so it's not the AirPod 1 is not the only vehicle that they make. They make something called the One Flow Air. The Mini Flow Air, the City Flow Air, and the Multi Flow Air. And the One Flow Air is a five-seater. Has, again, the central driving position, which is a central driving position, so you have two passengers on either side and then two in the back. Strange cars, I'll tell you. Yeah. You should really check out the MDI site.
I really want to.
And see the photos. Right. Then there's this Mini Flow Air, which is similar to me, looks similar to me. Then there's the City Flow Air, which has six seats, and has kind of like an open cargo area in the back. And to me, from the side, it looked like almost like a tiny little pickup truck bed. But then there are other versions on the site that had that area covered as well.
Oh, okay.
But a six-seater.
Yeah, that's pretty surprising.
Yeah, it is. It really is. And then there's the – this is maybe the most surprising of all to me. I don't know why. Multi-flow air, which is kind of a bus train idea. It's one vehicle. It looks like a small bus.
Okay.
And then you can hook – wagons to that vehicle that can carry additional passengers. So you could have as many as four of these vehicles tied together, or at least the illustration had four. It looks like a small train that this thing is pulling, and of course, you know, powered by compressed air.
That's weird.
Yeah, it really is. It's really kind of an interesting idea.
And we've examined alternatives to gasoline engines in several other episodes.
Yeah.
Let's see, what have we done? We've done ethanol a little bit.
Have we talked about switchgrass? There's maybe not. You can power a car with switchgrass.
Right.
Ethanol, of course. We've talked about that.
Hydrogen.
Hydrogen's another good one. We have an article that's called, I think it's five alternative fuels that never made it out of the lab. We should talk about that one. I mean, there's everything from diapers to garbage to... there's something about cats. I mean, it's odd.
So listeners out there, please consider that a plug for an upcoming episode. And the reason I'm asking about this alternative fuel, you know, a lot of people, given the recent instability in gas prices, are looking for a light at the end of the tunnel. Mm-hmm. And and I'm going to ask you this question. I always ask you some version of this, and I want you to answer it in two ways. The question is, what do you think of the Air car? And the two ways I'd like you to answer, and I feel they might be a little different. First, in your expert opinion, and then second, cool factor.
Okay.
Okay. Expert opinion first.
Yeah. Okay. Go then. Okay, got it.
Yeah.
Yes, I think that I think it's possible for city car travel. We've seen a lot of different cars like this for city car travel, or city travel rather, and we've had some that are just outright called city cars. We've had, you know, these small folding car type things, and you know,
And like, you know, the Mini.
Yeah, the Mini. Well, yeah, even smaller than that. I'm talking like the electric, you know, run about the city type cars.
Oh yeah.
Even the ones in the news recently, the Puma vehicle.
Oh, Puma, the
personal
urban
motility? No, not
motility. Oh, well, yeah.
Mobility something.
Yeah.
Interesting idea. It was the Segway GM combo vehicle. And I think that it's possible. I think that, you know, something like this is a good idea for city travel. Now, on the open road, you know, highway travel, clearly not. I mean, as soon as you see this thing, if you, you know, take the time to take a look at a photo of it, I don't think that something like this would stand up to the Insurance Institute for Highway Safety standards that, you know, vehicles here in the United States have to uphold. I just don't think that it would make it.
And also, this is sort of a minor point, but it goes back to what you said about infrastructure, and it doesn't seem as though it's really designed to be a long haul. So maybe the technology in present form is not adequate. You know, we can't replace all the 16-wheeler convoys.
Right? Oh, no, definitely not. These aren't really meant to haul heavy freight anywhere. These are meant to get to and from work, maybe to the grocery store, but you'd have to have a different model in order to be able to carry those groceries back home.
Sure.
There's just not enough space, really. I mean, unless you pile them up, I guess. But I think that it has its place. Maybe not on the highways.
Maybe not on the highways.
City travel, sure, why not? You know, or, you know, maybe one of these vehicles that you rent in a touristy type town to drive up and down, you know, the main strip there, and that's about it.
True. Which is not necessarily a bad thing.
No, that's not necessarily a bad thing. Yeah, I just don't think that really has a mass marketable appeal.
Okay, then how about this, Scott? Coolness factor. Would you drive one?
I would like to. I think it'd be kind of cool to have one just almost as a it'd have to be a second or even a third car, really. It just couldn't be your main mode of transportation. It just doesn't have the storage. It's not very practical. It's just a really, really odd car, Ben. I mean, check it out and you'll see what I mean.
Yeah.
Look at the site, the MDI site, and you'll see that, like I said, it's just not something that you would want to be your primary form of transportation, but it is cool.
Yeah, I don't know if I would get rid of the car I have now for this one. I could see it, as you're saying, as a second car, maybe. But I think also you might not like it because it's not the fastest car.
It doesn't look, it has a real, I don't mean to be, you know, coarser, you know, you know what I mean. I don't mean to be
derogatory.
Yeah, exactly. I'm not trying to put it down or anything, but it just has an odd look to it that I don't think I could really see myself really buying one of these.
Okay, I don't know what you're saying. It's innovative though, and it's I think it's a pretty good idea. I'd really like to drive one.
Yeah,
at
I would
some
too.
Point.
Might be cool to, you know, have one in your garage and hop in it to you know, head down to the pool or the tennis courts or something like that.
With a joystick, man? Come on.
That'd be kind of fun. Yeah. That would be fun. Yeah. And I always like kind of different innovative ways to steer. That's kind of a cool thing.
We could do something on that.
Yeah, maybe. Go all the way back to Kit from Knight Rider.
And
kind of that unique. Well, anyways, we're getting way.
Well,
top
you know, when a Knight Rider reference comes up, that usually means that we're wrapping up the show for the day. Scott, thank you again for breaking down the science behind air cars.
yeah.
And for all our listeners out there, thanks so much for tuning in. If you would like to send us an email, please write to us at highspeedstuff@howstuffworks.com. And if you'd like to learn more about some automotive-related subjects that we examine in more depth, maybe you should check out the blog. Right, Scott?
Oh, yeah, the blog. We work on it every day. And a lot of stuff comes up on the blog that, you know, is daily news, you know, that type of stuff that's a little more current than what we can do here on the podcast. We're, you know, we're covering articles and, you know, past article topics, but on the blog we cover daily news and, you know, what's happening. So yeah, it's a good place to go.
Thanks so much. We'll see you next time.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit HowStuffWorks.com.